Today's scripture reading is in Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 through 46. If you turn to this place, would you please rise and read God's words? I will read the number of verses, and would you please respond with reading the even verses? Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 through 46. Verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the angels with Him, He will sit on the throne in heavenly glory. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. For I'm thirsty, and you give me something to eat. Hungry, you give me something. I was thirsty, and you give me something to drink. I was a stranger, invite me in. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did you see the sick in prison and go to visit you? Then he will say to those on his left, Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. He will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. It gives me a great deal of pleasure and honor to introduce today's speaker, Dr. Haddon Robinson. In his illustrious career, Dr. Robinson has served as the president and senior director of the Doctor of Ministry program at Gordon-Conwell. In 1979 to 1991, for 12 years, he was the president of the Denver Conservative Baptist Seminary in Denver, Colorado. He also served as the president of Evangelical Theological Society in 1983. He has taught homiletics on the faculty of Dallas Theological Seminary for 19 years. This is just to name a few. And he was named also among Christianity International's top 25 most influential preachers from 1956 to 2006 in a span of 50 years. He was an expert in the area of preaching and has written numerous books, articles on the subject of preaching. And he could truly be called a teacher of preachers and pastors. He was also a prolific writer. Besides being the author of many books, one can find his articles oftentimes in popular journals, magazines like Moody Monthly, Christianity Today, Our Daily Bread, etc., etc. It really gives me a really great pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Dr. Haddon Robinson. Give him a special welcome. Thank elected official.
Let me tell you just a bit about this passage that Elder Lang read to you just a moment ago. I want to give you the history, not that you would get in a theological seminary or a Bible college, but my own personal history with this section. First time I remember hearing about the judgment of the sheep and goats, I was probably 11 years of age. My cousin and I were on a spiritual search. We were looking for a church that had a basketball team. And we found it at the Broadway Presbyterian Church in New York. And that's when I learned an important lesson. And that is that every silver lining has a cloud. Because in order to play on the basketball team, you had to go to Sunday school at least 3 Sundays a month. And that's where I came in contact with Miss Lang. She was a Sunday school teacher, and she had a great interest in the second coming of Christ. She had a particular interest in the judgments connected with the coming of Christ, probably explained by the boys in her class. But she was the first to talk about the judgment of the sheep and goats. At that stage in my life, everything was literal. So when she talked about the judgment of the sheep and goats, I thought she was talking about sheep and goats. I pictured it as a kind of county fair. Never been at a county fair living in the heart of New York City, but I imagined that Jesus would be there separating out the animals, the sheep and the goats. And frankly, I thought it was kind of trivial for the king of the universe to be fooling around with animals, but she also told us that Jesus counted the hairs on our head, and I figure if he's into that kind of trivia, sheep and goats made some sense. Next time I came to this passage, I was about 13, 14. By that time, I had figured out that the passage talking about sheep and goats wasn't talking about sheep and goats, it was talking about people. That the good people were pictured as sheep, the bad picture, people were pictured as goats. Why the good people were sheep and the bad people are goats, I had no idea. A while ago, I was out in Western Washington, and I talked to a man who raised sheep. I said, you know, we're doing 25,000 sheep at a time. And I said, you know, I've often wondered, when you think of sheep, what's the word that comes to your mind? And he shat back the answer. He said, stupid. They've got to be the stupidest animals God ever made. I'm not going to go there this morning. I'll leave it to the elders to follow that up. I said, what about goats? And he said, they're kind of stubborn animals, and they'll eat almost anything. At any rate, the good people are called sheep, the bad people are called goats. It's called the judgment of the nations. So I assumed there'd be a big crowd there. And back when I was in my early teens, I tried to picture it. And the best I could do was to think of the crowds at Macy's department store in New York right before Christmas. You know, they were there pushing, shoving, trying to get at the scarves or the shirts or the pajamas. And then up in the balcony, some musical angels would appear. I mean, they put down their harps, they pick up their trumpets, there'd be a blast of the trumpet and say, all right, this is the judgment of the sheep and goats. You are sheep. You come up to the king's right, your left, and you are goats to the king's left, your right. And I knew that would be a piece of cake. I mean, we'd heard about the judgment of sheep and goats, so I and other fellows in the class would come sauntering up to king's right. What bothered me was the fellows in my gang. I mean, they didn't go to Sunday school, and they never heard of the judgment of the sheep and goats. And I figured there'd have to be an angel to go to, you know, to talk to them about what this is all about. Fellows like Carl Bracali and Marty Lippin and Henry Moorlach. And I can imagine that would be a tough assignment for the angel. imagine the angel would say, all right, you fellows are goats, you're over to the king's left. And I said, what do you mean by goats? Where did you grow up calling us goats? Well, it's the way you treated or didn't treat the king. I mean, he came and he was hungry, you didn't feed him, he was thirsty, you didn't give him anything to drink. Needed a place to stay, you didn't invite him in. He needed clothes, you didn't clothe him. He's sick, you didn't take care of him. He's in prison, you didn't visit him. They say, you're kidding us. We ain't never seen that king. He ain't been in this neighborhood. And the angel would explain, it was not the king exactly, it's the people that the king loved. They came, and you did not take care of them. I can't imagine Carl Bacalli saying, wait a minute, you don't know our neighborhood. I mean, you invite strangers into your home, they'll take out a knife and they'll cut your throat. And my friend Andy Medina would say, you know, I got a brother up at Sing Sing, and we visit him a couple times a year. That count? I just knew it was going to be a tough assignment for that angel working with friends of my gang. Next time I came to this passage, just more or less recently, and I discovered something that was so clear, so evident that I had missed it. And that is, not only do the goats ask, when did we see you hungry or thirsty? The sheep also ask it. The sheep are as confused as the goats. They asked, well, when did we see you, Lord? When did we see you hungry or thirsty, needing clothes, a place to stay? Sheep are as confused as the goats. I thought about that. Let me tell you one thing this passage doesn't say. It is not saying that when you go to the checkout counter at the local grocery store and they have a can to put in coins to feed hungry kids, that you put in some coins, and by the time the coins hit the bottom, you bought your way into the kingdom. It's not saying if you serve some meals down at the rescue mission at Christmas or Thanksgiving, that gives you the ticket into the kingdom. You know as well as I do, if you know the New Testament, you just can't get the kingdom on the cheap. But what does it say? Well, I think the key to the passage may be in the way that the passage addresses the sheep and the goats. In verse 34, the king will say to those on his right, the sheep, come, you who are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. That's not a throwaway line, that being blessed by my Father. That's a theme all the way through the Gospel of Matthew. If you go back early in the book, you come to what is called the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount begins with Beatitudes, repetition, those who are blessed. First Beatitude is, blessed are the poor in spirit, because theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are women and men who realize that they are spiritually bankrupt, and realize they have no coinage to get them out of debt. And then, blessed are those who mourn, because they shall be comforted. Mourn about what? Well, mourn about the fact that they are bankrupt sinners. They have no way on their own to have any kind of an approach to this king. And it says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. The promise in the Bible is not heaven, golden streets, pearly gates. It's the new kingdom, the new earth that will come when Christ occurs. And these who are meek will inherit that earth. Other translations talk about those who are humble, some other words. The reason they didn't use meek in every other version is simply that you can imagine how the translators would talk. You know, we're supposed to translate the Bible into the language of the people, and, you know, meek just doesn't work. I mean, the first word that pops into your mind when you think of meek is weak. You think of a meek man who would be insulted if you called him that with enough intestinal fortitude to squish a grape. So you better get another word. But meek is really a pretty strong word. It was used outside the literature of the New Testament of a horse that won a horse race. And it said that horse was the meekest horse in the race. It didn't mean that the horse was too shy to leave the starting gate or too embarrassed to take the lead. What they meant was that the horse was submissive to its jockey. One touch of the stick and it bounded forward. One movement of the reins, it went from side to side. So the meek are those who are in submission to this king. They'll inherit the earth. And then the next beatitude says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, because they'll be filled. Righteousness in the Bible isn't a thing. You can't go someplace and get 5 pounds of righteousness. Righteousness always speaks of a relationship. Remember back in the First Testament, it says of Abraham, he believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness. It meant that because he believed the promise of God, he had a relationship to God that he didn't have before. And so these bankrupt sinners who mourn about their sin, submit to the king, are hungry and thirsting for that relationship. Not only a relationship with the king, but a relationship with other people. And those people will be filled. The next one is, blessed are the merciful, because they will receive mercy. That makes sense, doesn't it? That is, if you as a bankrupt sinner with nothing going for you mourn about your spiritual condition and just cast yourself on the king, and you have the righteousness that he can give, then if you have received righteousness, you will give it. It would follow logically and spiritually that those who have received God's righteousness relationship will extend it to others. Blessed are the pure in heart, because they shall see God. One thing I know is those who are not pure of heart don't want to have anything to do with God. But blessed are those that God in his mercy and grace has established as righteous and works in their lives to make that happen. And the final one is, blessed are the peacemakers, because they shall become the sons or daughters, or they shall be called the sons or daughters of God. That makes sense, doesn't it? That is, if you have received the righteousness of Christ and you have a relationship with God, you're at peace with God, then you want to spend a part of your life sharing that with others. You want to tell people that God's not angry, that God has signed the peace treaty in the blood of his son at the cross, and God is satisfied with what Jesus did. And by the way, it really doesn't matter what you think about Jesus Christ. What matters immensely is what God thinks of him. And God says, I am satisfied with what he did to take away sins. And we want to tell people, you've got to be satisfied with what satisfies God. And not only bringing people to peace with God, but to break down barriers between people. Between Jew and Gentile, between Arab and Christians, people in the East, people in the West. Always breaking down the barriers to establish peace. Now you take all of that from Matthew and bring that over to Matthew 25, where it says, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world." What I take it that this passage is doing is saying that men and women who have come to know this King are changed. And the natural result of that is that they are people who are blessed by God and who are constantly doing acts of kindness and love. Acts they themselves may not even recognize. It's like a sheep giving wool. It's the nature of a sheep to give wool. I haven't had conversations with sheep lately, but I don't think a sheep stands out in a meadow and says, "Got to produce wool. Oh, 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 and there's wool." Just happens. It's the natural result of having that DNA. And the natural result of a person who knows this King and lives in peace with him is that they produce these acts of kindness and love, and they hardly notice them. So I thought about all of that. I thought of what it would be like at Day of Judgment. I presume I'll be there. And I can imagine coming before the King and the King saying to me, "Robinson, you got your date book?" "Yes, Lord, I do. I've been so close to this all my life that it, you know, didn't. I know it says you can't take anything out of the world, but I got this. I got to pass customs coming into the kingdom." The King will say, "Okay. Look up November 1983. "Oh yes, Lord, I remember that. I was the president of the Evangelical Theological Society. It's up in Denver, but I had an appointment to go down to Dallas as president. And I was supposed to read a paper. The paper was the relationship of hermeneutics to homiletics." And the King will say, "Well, I don't often make it to those meetings. They're so stuffy, I don't like to go. And I read the title of your paper. I didn't understand it, so I just pushed it aside." No. The reason I had you look at that was, do you remember that before you went to Dallas, your wife told you about some students at the seminary? And I had decided to give them a 25-day check for a 31-day month. And they were having a time. And you folks put some money in an envelope and put it in their box. You remember that? Well, that's 1983. Lord, I know. Maybe Bonnie would remember. I don't think I do. The King will say, "I remember. When you gave that money to that couple at the school, you gave it to me. And I've never forgotten it." All right, look at another one. look at March 1984. Oh, yes, Lord, I remember that. That's when I was mentioned in Newsweek magazine as one of the 10 best communicators in the English-speaking world. And the king will say, I don't know, I never read news magazines. They're always so inaccurate. If they had something like that in there, you know how inaccurate it is. No, what I had in mind was that after class that day, you were going to another meeting, and a young woman just sat there when everyone else was gone, and you asked her how she was doing, and she said, oh, okay. And then you said, how are you doing really? And she broke down and wept. She told you that her brother had just died in an accident. And a month or two before, her father had died. And she found the grief more than she could carry. Remember that? You really didn't know what to do, but you just sat there and listened. Remember that? Maybe, I guess, Lord, not very clear to me. And the king will say, I remember. When you sat and tried to help that young woman, you were helping me. And I've never forgotten it. There will be a lot of surprises at the judgment. They're going to be those who are absolutely sure they should be there. They'll come to the king and say, have we not prophesied in your name? Have we not cast out demons? Have we not done many mighty works? The king will say, sorry, I don't know you. And then there'll be others. And when they see the glory of that king, they'll feel like turning away. I mean, they have nothing to bring. I mean, they don't have a chance with God unless somehow in his mercy and his grace he finds a way to get them into the kingdom and in a relationship with him. And they're about to despair of that. And those are the people who will make it in. There'll be a lot of surprises at the judgment. And I suppose the greatest one is, if any of us, because of the grace of Christ, make it in.